this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being. This is going to be a little different program. We have with us Mr. Malcolm Morris, who works for an organization. I think he heads the organization known as Living Water. And, of course, he's really talking about how providing water for people in out throughout the world, we know most people in America, we think water comes out of a faucet, but it really doesn't in many areas in the world, and I've lived in some of them or traveled through them, where water is a commodity, has to be carried for miles or long distances, and certainly the water is not safe. Many times it's contaminated. Now, Mr. Morris, how did you get involved in putting in wells for people in underdeveloped countries?
You know, I want to tell you first, I have enjoyed listening to the music here a minute. Great program. We went to Africa in 1990, and this was a one-time mission trip. And when we got over there, we saw the great, great need for water. And we tried to drill our first unsuccessful well. Came back to Houston, Texas, and our team felt very bad about not completing three wells we had promised the folks. So we went back and drilling three wells, went for some equipment and found a large rig belonging to Amoco Oil from Houston, Texas, that was sitting in Kenya, Africa. We talked to Amoco, and they agreed to make that rig available. We formed Living Water International to receive that first rig, and really the rest is history from there. We received that rig, and then we had to begin using it, and it has been used to bring a lot of glory to the Lord and a lot of water to people.
Now, of course, are you simply a private mission group raising funds generally and just going over there and trying to provide this necessary ingredient for life there?
Yes, really, this was a group of businessmen who went in 1990, organized on a trip by a pastor who invited a number of businessmen to go with him, and Living Water was founded by a group of businessmen in Houston, Texas. And personally, I run a Fortune 1000 company, and I am chairman-elect of the board of Living Water. Been involved with it since its inception.
So this is really just something you do as a personal ministry in between making a living in the Fortune 500 company?
Fortune 1000.
1000 company?
Well, that's correct, but I tell you, this is the greatest joy that I have in all of life, to be able to provide a cup of water in Jesus' name to people who are making less than a dollar a day.
Well, now, what parts of the Africa are you going to? Are you going all throughout Africa?
Yeah, we started in Kenya, but we now are in Tanzania and Kenya and Ghana and Uganda. We've done work in Sudan. We're preparing to go into Ethiopia. Senegal is another one. We're just opening in Nigeria. But it's not just Africa. We have operations also in South and Central America, as well as in India.
Well, now, of course, how do you get the pumps to work? Do you have solar power? Because most of these places don't have electricity, do they?
A lot of them that don't. There's two kind of a bifurcated projects that we do. One is in the rural areas, and in the rural areas you use a hand pump. We put on a well, and in the what we call the peri-urban areas, on the fringes of the larger areas. Let me give you an example. A city the size of Nairobi was built with an infrastructure for about 600,000 people, but today it's the size of the city of Houston, over 3.5 million. There is no water coming out the ends of the pipe, out to the hospitals and so forth that used to have water, do not receive water anymore. So we, in those peri-urban areas, we're also taking care of the water needs with very large community-sized boreholes. And those actually have electricity. Other areas we put windmills on. We are experimenting with some solar. And in some places we use the diesel.
Now, how far down do you have to go to get the water?
You know, it's where God put it. And we may be going 70 feet, we may be going 700, 800, even 1,100 feet.
All right, fine. Now, how do you know where to drill, or do you just sort of drill and hope there's water there? Is there any trick to it?
Oh, you know, there is a trick to it, and it's real simple. I think if any of us have ever walked somewhere, you'll notice a vegetation line even when you don't see water. And what God gave us, that's really the outcropping of a plant who has a root system looking for water down below it. So that gives you the evidence. Second thing is that you often look for hand-dug wells. And the problem with a hand-dug well, it tells us that there's water available in the area, but the hand-dug well is only drilled down to the very first aquifer that may, you know, they may have it at 20 or 30 feet. That is the aquifer, though, that gets the drainage, if you will, the seepage from animals, from human waste, etc., that goes into that aquifer and mixes with it. So we kind of call that the latrine water level. And you want to go below that and to get good water. If you're hand digging the well, if you go below that level, though, you drown. So that doesn't work too well.
And so, of course, you've got these. Now, do you have a lot of these large oil-like drilling rigs, or what sort of rigs do you use?
Well, we have two. One is a very small rig built by one of the co-founders of Living Water, Harry Westmoreland, and it's called an LS-100. That is designed to drill to 100, 120 feet. And that rig can be taken apart, even put in a canoe and several canoes and taken up the Amazon. So that's very small. Large rigs are huge, yes, where we're drilling a community borehole.
All right, fine. And we're going to have to take a quick break here. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Malcolm Morris.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi, and there's no better time to establish a biological response kit in your home. In an age when we hear about biological threats, more common are cases of E. coli in our food, cryptosporidium in our tap water, and staph germs, viruses, and molds in our air conditioning systems. Why be a sitting duck and run to the doctor after you've got a problem? Why not take something to stay healthy, like Alamex, the all-new 100% pure Allicin garlic extract. You won't find Alamex in stores, but you'll find it by calling 866-405-4000. Alamex is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. And guess what? It's odor-free. Call 866-405-4000.
All right.
Hello,
this is Dr. Stan, and I just wanted to mention that if you have not yet laid in a supply of food, you probably ought to have one on hand. Certainly the government keeps telling us we're going to have a terrorist attack of some sort, a biological, chemical, nuclear. I hope and pray that they're wrong, but just in case that they are telling it the truth this time, you would be very, very foolish not to have made preparations for a possible interruption of the normal way of life that we lead. And if you'd like a checklist of the things that you ought to have, as well as certainly information on how to get ready reserve food products, which are packed in nitrogen in the last 10, 12 years, give a call to 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202. That's Ready Reserve Food Company. And then, of course, if you've never tried our Miracle 2 soap products, give us a call. Certainly we have a regular soap, we have a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizer. All of these products seem to be extremely beneficial. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Mr. Malcolm Morris, who, of course, is the CEO and one of the Fortune 1000 companies and 1000 companies. But he spends a lot of time working with these groups that go overseas and, you know, drilling water and really providing it to the communities, both urban and certainly rural in Africa. And most people have actually lived in Africa and traveled through Africa. And I had the unique opportunity to spend 3 years living in Africa in the mid-1970s. You really have no idea what the real world is like. People here in America live in a utopia. I mean, there's no place really in the world like it. Yes, a few European countries where you can at least drink the water safely. But, you know, the prosperity we have here, the abundance, most people think that food comes out of a grocery store. No, it doesn't. You know, there in those rural areas where people's mainstay is a mealy meal, a cornmeal, you know, where people have to eke out a living. So many people live in poverty where the hospitals, you know, the medical facilities, there's just nothing there. Well, they've got a lot of condoms, but they certainly don't have any medicines for most of the regular diseases. Abject poverty. Mr. Morris, wasn't this quite a revelation when you went to Africa and saw what life was really like?
It was absolutely incredible, and to see how people literally spend every day of their lives just trying to survive for that day. And it's just incredible.
It really is. And, you know, of course, you have to have water to live, and this is what's so incredible. And there's really the infrastructure of these societies so impoverished because all of their money, so much of their money is just going to pay the interest on the debt that's been stolen by the leaders, you know, and they have their big accounts over in Switzerland or Swaziland or wherever it may be. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the people live in chronic poverty, and there's just no money to build up the infrastructure, the roads. In fact, my understanding is that the roads are a lot worse than they were 30 years ago.
Yes, sir. They really have gotten worse. And, you know, one thing I just wanted to go back and reiterate about the water. If you are a mother, you're spending 5 hours a day or more getting water, boiling water, straining water, trying to go wherever you can just to provide the water for your family. So you cannot be involved productively in any type of a job, et cetera. The children are sick. 5,500 children died today because of lack of clean water. The children get diarrhea. They cannot go to school or be educated. And the body, when it's not properly hydrated, cannot fight disease, nor can it learn. And so you have a cycle of no education, a cycle of poverty, and water is the beginning point for economic development.
And, of course, you have to have water, and then, of course, there's this chronic malnutrition in so many parts of Africa today, and certainly we hear now in Rhodesia, or they call it Zimbabwe today, where food is being used as a weapon for the government there to destroy its enemies, and this is the way the world goes. We provide some food, and then, of course, they don't give it to half the population because they don't like half the population because they don't support the rural dictator. Do you run into any problems with the politics over there? Do you just go in as missionaries to help the people?
You know, what we have done is to go people to people. If you try to work through governments, through large funding that way, what you do is you wind up trying to put $200 million in the top of a government in order to get $1 million down the hole, if you will. And by going people to people, we certainly work with the government. We prove up. We test wells for water quality, et cetera. We don't want to violate government regulations. But on the other hand, it is a direct people-to-people. If we can furnish those folks water, they can grow their own crops. And so we actually, most of the places that we have worked, the government themselves, the government leaders themselves, have come to call upon Living Water, knowing that we can do such a better job than even they can get their own government water companies to do.
Well, now, how big a crew do you have on one of these rigs?
You know, generally we have 4 to 5 people, maybe 6. One of those jobs is the evangelist, because whenever you're out drilling, you really attract a crowd. And so you've got an automatic audience there. And so there's a time to share. And gee, at night after the drilling stops, we throw a sheet up and show the Jesus film.
I think that's a great, great evangelical tool. And do you have it in the local language?
Yes, sir. We would show them in Swahili or whatever the language might be.
All right, fine. And now, are you mostly in Central Africa, Northern Africa, Southern Africa, or do you just go all over the continent?
You know, it's really all over. We've concentrated really in the east, but now we're doing more, beginning to do more in the west now. A lot of development up and down the west coast of Africa, and so we're doing some work there.
And you know, it's the most amazing thing. I mean, the water's there. It's just a matter of getting down to it and of course, making sure it's safe when you get there. But do you check it for toxic chemicals as well as for bacteria count?
Yes, sir, we do.
All right, fine. Then you must have laboratory technicians with you, or how do you get it tested?
We have some field tests, if we're there are some very simple tests to test for a number of things that would be detrimental to human health with the water. But in the more urban, I call the peri-urban areas, the larger areas that we talked about earlier, we will use testing labs.
Okay, now how many wells have you think you've drawn? How many wells have you drilled here in the last 12 years or so?
You know, we tried to, this is very interesting, we tried to, as an American, think that we could do it better ourselves. So we tried to do everything from America, really, until about the end of 1994. And we found that we had failure after failure, sending drill crews from America with nobody on the ground and trying to do something for people. And what the Lord taught us at the end, when we were literally at our wits' end, we sent our head driller over to attempt one last well. He went out to the Great Rift Valley to drill a well for the Maasai.
That was in Kenya?
In Kenya.
Right.
And he got down, put every piece of pipe on that very large rig, Jaswell 3500, put every piece of pipe, and we drilled the deepest and driest post hole that we'd ever drilled in all of Africa. The Maasai chief came over to Harry Westmoreland, who was the head driller, and gave him a big hug, had a young man interpreting for him, and said, you know, we didn't think there was any water there, but you showed us the love of God by coming and trying. And it was at that point that a Kikuyu man, who was vice president of the Castor Oil Company of Kenya, and who had led the team out there, said he looked over at that site, and he said, you know, the only water that I saw was in the eyes of the white men from America. And God called him to join Living Water, to quit his job, and to join Living Water, and to head up Living Water Kenya. It's at that point that God taught us, you know, I want you to use my people, my indigenous people, and train them. As a result, we went out and we began building drill training schools. We now have 7 drill training schools open. We started in Houston, Texas. We have 5 in America, actually 2 in Houston now, 5 in America and 2 in Africa. And we train trainers. We have now trained over 650 volunteer drillers who go overseas, work with indigenous people, some without jobs, etc., teach them to drill. We equip them with equipment, and then when we leave, we have a new crew, local indigenous people, trained to drill and to continue after we leave bringing water to their people.
Well, now, are you using then some smaller units? Than we?
Yes, sir. That would be our smaller units.
All right. Now, of course, we see them here in the United States, and you know you can buy them for $4,000 or $5,000, and I suppose they'll go down a couple of hundred feet, won't they?
Yes, sir.
And is this the sort of thing that you're trying to get the people there to use locally?
Yes, sir.
All right, so you're not using then all just these two great big giant rigs that you have, but you're using simply any way you can to get water into the local areas.
Absolutely. You know, we've trained, though, even our large rigs, we have now trained indigenous crews, you know, to run those large rigs, and they're very, very productive. The government in Kenya, for instance, was producing with about the same type of equipment 12 wells a year, and we completed 37 last year with the large rig alone, just in Kenya. And we have a new rig that has just arrived in Kenya, which is going to be able to double our production on that one rig to over 60 boreholes in Kenya this coming year. And we're really, really excited about the newer equipment that is going to help us to bring more water to the people.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment, and we'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Mr. Malcolm Morris, who's an executive, corporate executive, but he's involved with Living Water. Well, this is Archie Stan, and this is the time I just wanted to mention a couple of items we carry. One of them, of course, is the Phenopoly sets. And if you have a child in government schools, of course, they're not going to learn to read properly. They're going to get the look-see type of education. You need your children to learn to read phonetically, and with Phenopoly, which is a board game played like Monopoly, in 16 to 20 hours, you can retrain their mind to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. Most of the programs, $300 or $400. This is $139.95. And it's five board games, two bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books to explain what happened to the American educational system. It's called Phenopoly. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. More. And then, of course, we carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. And if you have children or grandchildren in government schools, here you can get 22 CDs and a program, lesson program, textbooks, everything you need but the sex and math textbooks for $199.95 to take the child from grammar school all the way to high school graduation. And Dr. Robinson used this on his own children. And, of course, three of them, I think, now have gone in the college right in as juniors. Why bother to waste their time on the first 2 years of college? So your children can do it as well if they will apply themselves, and everything is there that you need on the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. And then if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand what's really going on in the world today and why Africa is impoverished, why we have the problems that we have, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And consider getting the Brotherhood of Darkness, or preferably the Brotherhood of Darkness special, the book, the video, and the audio tape. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, Dr. Stan, our guest today is Mr. Malcolm Morris, and of course we're talking about a group of businessmen who are providing the funds to send crews over to Africa, not only to do the drilling, but to teach the Africans how to obtain water for their communities. And of course, Africa is so impoverished, you have no idea, really, how bad things are over there until you've actually been there. You've seen it, and even in the cities. I lived in South Africa and at a time when everything was in great shape, but even South Africa is having some problems. Where you get north into Rhodesia, you're talking about half the population facing starvation today. And, of course, all throughout Africa, the problems with shortages of food increasingly in many of the countries. But, of course, one of the biggest things is water. You can get by for a time without food, but you certainly can't get by without water. Without that, of course, there can be nothing. Now, are you having an opportunity to bring many of these people to a personal relationship with our Lord?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. That is the number one goal of what we do. And water is such a wonderful way to share the message of Christ. Number one, when we bring the water up, we don't tell them that we brought the water, but God put the water there. We just brought it up. And Jeremiah 2:33, God says to His own people, He says, "I hold two things against you, that you have rejected Me, the living water." Fresh water. Think of that as flowing crystal clear water out of a rock. And instead, hewn for yourself cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. And we think of water in a cistern as being sort of stagnant, not the type of water we would like to drink. And He says it to the woman at the well in John 4:10, that if she had only known who asked, she would have asked of Him, and He would have given her living water. And in Revelation, we read that the springs of living water flow from the throne of God Himself. So God has referred to Himself all throughout the Bible as the living water. And when we are sharing Christ in three forms, water, presents itself as steam and presents itself as a liquid and presents itself as an ice. And God has presented Himself in the spirit and the flesh and the Father, and we're just, we make an analogy that way as well. Water is made up of three parts. God uses water all throughout the Scripture. He says, "Give a cup of water in My name." And, it's hard to just go start talking to somebody about God when they are so thirsty and so needy, and we have not done anything for them. But when you give a cup of water to somebody, soften the very first cup of water they've ever had that looks like that they could even see through, and they say, "Why are you doing this?" And we can say, "We wanted to do this to show you the love of God. We want to talk to you about the living water, something that's even more important than the water that we're handing you right now."
Well, of course, you teach by example, and of course the fact that you're not getting anything at all, you have nothing to gain, you're just there to help as Christians. And that was Christianity really should be. It's not glitz, it's not popular television programs, it's not dancing, it's not music, it is that love of one human being for another, irrespective of the color of their skin. For every person is an individual made in the image and likeness of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really wonderful that that you're over there and accomplishing this. And what is the attitude of the government towards you? Are they a little suspicious of you, or are they usually very grateful because you're there helping the people where, in many instances, they don't have the facilities, the knowledge, or the ability to really provide what the people need?
They really don't, and they are really very grateful. Everywhere that we have been, people have been extremely nice. We've been invited into Muslim areas. If you bring in water, they'll let you come in and bring the message of Jesus with it.
Well, certainly, you know, there's, I don't know how they take to your talking about God, Jesus Christ, but, you know, of course, actually, there are an awful lot of Muslims I've heard that are becoming Christians. It's very dangerous if you're living in a Muslim community to admit that, because they automatically kill you if you do. That's a capital offense for a Muslim to convert to Christianity. Not the other way around. That's perfectly all right. But
that's right.
On the other hand, we have to do it. And, you know, we have to bring the message to them. And Muslims are coming to know our Lord just because of the getting the message out, really, and the people are willing to go into Muslim countries and risk their lives. And I'm sure many of our listeners remember when we went into Afghanistan, and there were six missionaries, two of them were American women, and they were actually on trial for their lives, had been imprisoned, and they faced execution.
Right.
And what was their crime? Why they were talking about Jesus Christ in a Muslim country. Mm-hmm. What madness is this?
Well, you know, that's Sharia law, which says that you're free to practice religion, but the only one you can practice is Islam.
Right.
And I believe all these two dear ladies were doing, as a matter of fact, both from Texas, were just answering questions there about why are you here and why are you helping us, and they shared about God and their understanding of who He was. But, you know, what we are finding is the more we have gotten involved in the water, is that the future wars of the world are going to be fought not over oil, but over water. Right now, there's a huge hotbed around the Jordan River Basin where Jesus Himself was baptized, in the Nile, and in the Euphrates. You have transnational river basins that cross many nations and many, many peoples reliant upon those rivers, and there's not enough water to go around. There is not enough water to go around. We were told by the head of water in Egypt that the leading cause of frustration leading to terrorism was the lack of water and sanitation. And we're just... you know, as we see that we provide water, we give people the ability to have a new life, a different life. And you know, as we then share Christ with them, they come to an understanding that brings more peace to themselves. And we believe it brings a level of dialogue even between Muslims and Christians that, you know, we can be friends even if we agree or disagree on who God is, or the way to get to Him. And we think it makes a great, great difference. And I really believe, Dr. Stan, that the Bible teaches us that if we will seek God, that ultimately He will reveal Himself to us. So if we can show people the love of God, even if they have been reared in another religion, and we can get them focusing on Him, that He has a lot more, we have a lot greater opportunity that God is going to then reveal the true Savior to them, and that they may find Him.
Well, how often do you get over there to Africa now?
You know, it's getting more often. quite often, once or twice. I've been trying to go once every year, and now it's becoming sometimes two or even three times a year. And again, we have operations on different continents, although most of... we have our different board members will concentrate on different countries and working with the nationals in those countries, the indigenous people who lead the living water efforts in each of those countries. And so we tend to keep going back to the areas that we are responsible for. And but the work is just expanding greatly. We've got the number of drill camps. We have actually got now over 120 rigs have been provided and are out working in 50 different countries.
Well, you know, of course, we hear about the Peace Corps, and the Peace Corps was, of course, our effort to remake the world, and we were going to send our people over there to drill wells. And a lot of people, idealistic young people, but not going from a religious point of view. They were just, you know, I'm going to save the world by my action. And so a lot of them did go to these faraway countries. Did you run into any of them? Did you see the effect of what they had done?
You know, we have run into a lot of Peace Corps people. We've run into people who were in the Peace Corps. And it's interesting in listening to the United Nations, listening to a number of relief organizations saying that the efforts of the 1980s when a number of wells were put in was a severe failure because 40% of those wells are no longer working. And so it's a real crisis again. And you know what we think is the amazing thing is that 60% of those wells are still working after 20 years. If you bought a car and you never maintained it for 20 years, you never put in a new battery and new tires and new belts and so forth, I can guarantee you it wouldn't still be running.
Well, of course, is it the pumps that have given out? Is the aquifer gone dry or what?
You know, most often it's just the pump needs a new leather, probably a nickel part. And so we have one of the solutions that was proposed was that you train somebody in every village to be able to fix the well and you give them the tools to do it. Well, if a well breaks down in 5, 10, 15 years, the person you trained may or may not still be alive. If he was, probably doesn't remember by then how to fix it. And even if he did, probably couldn't find the wrench you gave him. So what we find is that by training these indigenous people and creating people capable of doing for themselves, that they are working in the area. If something goes wrong with a well, it's nothing for a village to send somebody to run 90 miles even to find help. And a call can come into Living Water. We get calls via satellite phones or email from web cafes. And we have a database, a worldwide database that we built of now of every well that goes in with the GPS coordinates, what type of pump it is, et cetera, so that when a call for help comes in, we know exactly parts to send and who to send and so forth. And we've got people in country ready to service those wells.
Well, let's go to Jeannie, who's calling from La Selva Beach. Hi, Jeannie. Question or comment?
Dr. Stan, I'm on a cell, so I'm going into a dead spot pretty soon. But my question is, since I live in a third world country part-time, is what is the relationship between this man's company and the government and the bureaucracy? Who owns the water? And do you have an agreement with the country?
All right, fine. Basically, is that okay? Anything else, Jeannie?
No, I'll take it off the air.
All right, fine. Well, we'll get to that when we get back here in just a moment or two. But we're going to have to take a quick break. And, of course, this is the time when we remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you out there who listen to our program and believe that we truly are involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. And if you believe that there's a problem and you'd like to help us and of course, partner with us in our effort to reach out across America 5 hours every day as we do, and certainly a gradually increasing number of radio stations, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'd hope you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, if you'd like to know what really happened on September 11th, why we offer you a copy of Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence on the 18th of September of this year, and of course the video cameras were running and the reporters were writing down what she said and recording what she said, but nobody bothered to tell the American people what she said, and so we have taken it unto ourselves to reproduce her testimony in my October newsletter. I think you'll find it fascinating. The question she raises, her husband, of course, Ron, was killed in the South Tower. She feels very deeply about what happened. And, of course, this was a watershed event for America. What really happened last September, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of Kristen Breitweiser's testimony. Of course, if you haven't had a previous one of our newsletters, we'll be glad to get this one to you. go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And certainly pull down our programs. Many of them are archived there. You can pull down our newsletters. Encourage others to listen to the programs. Encourage them to listen, to read the newsletters. Help us to get the truth out across America, because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle, involved playing out on the political and ideological battlefield.
Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City? Well, a very important video is the cover-up in Oklahoma City. It really consists of film clips that were actually taken from video footage shot during the first 2 or 3 days after the bombing. And you'll actually hear the commentators in Oklahoma City talking about the second bomb, the third bomb that had been disarmed. Now, if they were actually disarming bombs there, why didn't we hear that throughout the rest of the country? You'll actually hear an interview with one of the gentlemen who was in the Murrah building at the time that the bomb went off, and he had time then to jump underneath his desk before the glass blew in from outside. Obviously, there were two bombs, one inside, one outside. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish.
Well, Dr. Stanback here. Our guest is Malcolm Morris, and we're talking about Living Waters, a ministry that he and a number of other business executives are involved in. And of course, Jeannie's question was, who owns the water after you put the rigs in?
You know, it's really interesting what we have learned to do. We make sure that where we generally drill is going to be some sort of a public site. We have found that it's very good to drill at churches, orphanages, hospitals, and schools, especially schools, as they are a place where parents come, where children can have water to drink during the day, and where children can then take water back to their homes from school. What we do is we go in and create a water committee. Before drilling the well, we go in and meet with the Christians. We find the man of peace or the woman of peace in a town, and we begin working with that person to build a committee. It's sort of like a Billy Graham crusade. You know, you go in and you get the community group together and the committee together, and you begin praying for the coming crusade. And that's what we do, is we create that committee. The well is, again, drilled on land. We make sure that the land is dedicated. It's not some private land where somebody will steal the water, basically, or start charging the people an arm and a leg to get it. Then when we come in to drill, the community is all involved. Everybody's been praying. The community is involved in drilling and helping to drill the well, carrying supplies, getting water, doing digging, etc., necessary for mud pits. This is a real community effort. And again, we involve the community in evangelism all during the time of the drilling of the well. And then after the well, when the water is hit and the pump set, there's a time of dedication and a celebration service. And it's made very clear, really, the whole community realizes that this is water for the community and that it does not belong to any certain person. But we do know that you have to have a water committee put together to operate the well, to let us know if there is a need, to oversee it, make sure that it's not vandalized, etc. You have to have responsibility, and that's extremely, extremely important.
Well, I'm sure you've learned all these tricks through the years as you've brought more and more wells in and provided more and more for the people there. Now, of course,
Dr. Stan is going to say one more thing: is these committees, these water committees that are formed, are often they're really the very first level of local government or governance that has ever existed. We actually create something that will be the basis for governance in a community. As they get water and begin to plant crops, as they begin to be able to have health, go to school, et cetera. You now have a group put together to oversee things for the community.
Well, you know, of course, the African continent, really, it's a beautiful, beautiful continent. It's rich in minerals. It's got wonderful, fertile land. And of course, it just is not being properly utilized at all. And of course, the tragedy is that people are dying in such large numbers. They die from malaria because we outlawed DDT, and they die from AIDS there because, of course, we're, in my estimation, we're giving them entirely the wrong message. Only in Uganda, where they preach abstinence and morality, is there a marked decrease in the incidence of disease. Have you run into the AIDS epidemic over there?
Very much so. The fact that the body... Although we all know biblically what we are to do to keep our bodies holy, bodies are subject to all sorts of infection. And when you're not properly hydrated in your body, you cannot fight infection. And we think that's probably, in our estimation, the reason that you see AIDS expanding so fast in Africa, because there's just no immune system. And when people fall into sin, quite often the men will go to the city to work to make some money. They are around loose women. They go home and take it to their lovely wives, and then expose their wives, and quite often then their children that are born through that. And it is a real travesty. You could found an orphanage a week in Africa, in every country of Africa, and not ever have enough. What we are doing in the orphanages that we put the wells in, everywhere we put a well, there's going to be a ministry that continues. Education happens at the orphanage. Children are taught, you know, the Word of God. They are taught in the orphanage why their parents died, and you know why it's important to put your trust in God, and to realize that He is our Maker and He is our Designer, and His rules are to keep us safe because He loves us.
Well, what a wonderful, wonderful way opening for really a ministry to begin to reach people with God's Word. And, of course, here, I mean, you follow God's laws, and your life is going to be so much simpler. Violate God's laws, and you're going to be in all sorts of problems. And, you would think that here the people in America might learn something from that very, very simple message. But it seems that we've got an awful lot of people here who think they're a lot smarter than God is, and that's why we have as many problems as we do. But over in Africa, you don't see that. You don't have the people, you know, who think they're a lot smarter than God. And I'm sure that in many respects, they're far more open to the gospel than they are here, aren't they?
They are very, very open, very seeking after God. You know, God says He will reveal Himself even through His handiwork. And, of course, we don't want to worship His handiwork. We want to worship the Creator. But He does reveal Himself, and quite often people are looking. They've been seeking God. They realize, even the natives there realize that there is a God. There is a great one. And when you're able to tell them who He is and how they can know Him, it's a celebration in their eyes. You can just see it as they get so excited of finally knowing who He is that they've been seeking.
Well, is there a website or anything that people could go to where they could learn more about what you're doing?
Yes, sir. You can go. We have a real easy new way to get there. It's called www.water.cc. Just two letters, CC. It's a new thing for charitable corporations. CC.
All right, fine. This is really run by as a charitable corporation by a number of businessmen who know the Lord, and this is how, of course, they're helping to spread the word.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think we each are called in our own way, and I really applaud what you and the others are doing. You're not getting anything other than the personal satisfaction of doing the Lord's work and seeing souls saved.
Dr. Stan, I can tell you that there is no greater blessing, and we, each of us, thank God that he's allowed us to be involved with him in this ministry.
And really, it's what, just about 12 years old now that you've been at this?
Yes, sir. And today, about 1.5 million people in the world are drinking water today from a living water well.
Well, I just hope it'll continue growing. And, of course, with the smaller rigs and then with the people who are trained to use them, this really massively expands your ability to have an outreach.
Yes, it's doubling. The ministry is doubling in size now about every 18 months, and we need volunteers. We really look for people who can go and people who are interested come to drill camp. We train church groups, all sorts of groups. You can go on the website at water.cc and look up the dates of the drill camps and register there, and then you'll be set to go out on a trip.
And you'll actually teach them how to use the rig and how to put a well in?
Yes, sir. We teach them, and then they're ready to go teach others.
Well, I think that's exciting. So, again, that's just www.water.cc.
That's it.
Well, do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners today?
Oh, you know, what I would like to say is that we in America, Dr. Stan, as you said, we have everything here. And it's so hard in America to think that we need to just stop and say, God, what do you want for me to do today? Or let me rely on you in some way. When we need something, we go to Home Depot or, you know, we go to the doctor or we get a pill. And I guess the greatest reason that I love going on these trips is that I have no access to anything. I have no employees to help me out. I have nothing to do but to rely on God, just as the natives there do. And I see miracle after miracle after miracle of what God does when we call on him, and he's all we have. And, you know, I am so thrilled that I have the opportunity to go there and really experience that, because in America, you know, sometimes we just forget to rely on God.
Well, I have a feeling that the events are going to unfold here that very soon are going to bring an awful lot of people to the realization they better be able to rely on God, because the time may very well soon come when without him, none of us will survive. God bless you for everything you're doing. It's been a fascinating hour, Mr. Morris, and I appreciate you being willing to come on with us.
You bet. And thank you, and God bless you and your work.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. That was Mr. Malcolm Morris. Of course, he's with Living Water Ministry, and isn't it exciting to know that here are men, executives, willing to give of their time and their sustenance with nothing but the realization that they're helping others and doing God's work. So, you know, we often have our programs, and it's all terrible, and things are getting worse. I just want you to know there are a lot of good things going on, too. A lot of good people out there, and the message of the gospel is getting out. Maybe not here in America, but it's getting out in Africa and in the Orient and elsewhere in the world. And, of course, our job is to reach as many people as we can here. And God put me here. He didn't send me back to Africa. But I hope that you'll join us in this epic struggle to determine that this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you, please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until then, Monday, may the Lord be with you.
Thanks, Al. Thank you for getting me that thing on the Satanic Club. Did you send that to me?
Actually, I haven't yet. My dad just, he just moved. So.
Okay, then don't worry about it, because Barrett Show sent it to me. I thought I found it up on my table. I thought it'd come from you, but obviously it didn't. That's all right. Anyway, how's things getting squared away? How's the new house?
It's a lot bigger.
Okay, you enjoying it?
Yeah.
Well, sure is miserable. Sure is miserable weather.
Just as bad as worse up there.
What's that?
Just as bad up there.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, when you stop and think of school down over in Africa, you realize how good we have it. Why? You realize we got nothing to complain about.
Yeah. My dad went to Africa as well.
When was he over there?
He was over there.